Jennifer.
Good evening, Josh. And Ed.
I was super confused for a moment.
Oh, Ed, whatever, out of sight, out of mind. Jennifer.
I feel horrible.
It's fine. Whatever. It happens.
Welcome to the Gleeful Podcast with Josh, Jen, and Ed. We are back to discuss the latest episode of Glee entitled Sexy. The show continues to be polarizing. In the past week, I've gotten three emails from people saying this is the worst episode of Glee ever, and just as many emails saying this is their favorite episode of Glee ever.
But is it polarizing good? I'd rather be polarizing than be... If you're liked by everyone, you're not loved by anyone.
I agree to a point. I definitely think that polarizing is usually good. Certainly better than bad. We'll go ahead and discuss, you know, the characteristics of this episode that make it polarizing and how we feel about that. I do think that with a show like Glee, there's always going to be a group of people that blanket love it, and there's always going to be a group of people that just blanket hate it. So, you know, it's just the source material. Jennifer, what do you think?
Well, yeah, I mean, I definitely find myself making excuses for some of the stuff because I know how much I loved season one. And there are moments every now and then sprinkled within the season that remind me of that. And I do still think it's really great. It's just changed a little bit. So I think I do give it more of the benefit of a doubt when I'm kind of unsure about how I feel.
I agree.
Okay.
Sorry, I got sucked into something else. Ed, how do we feel about Sexy? What was your temperature on the show this week?
I think it was really good. It reminds me of things that I like about it. It's a little controversial, but it should be. So whatever.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, I don't have the problem with the controversy. I think the thing that I'm kind of struggling with this episode is similar to what we're struggling with the drinking episode. I was like, okay, I know it's a TV show, and I know it, you know, it should just be viewed as entertainment only, but there are definitely places where they take a definitive stance on being, you know, the voice of what's right and what's decent in subjects like bullying and tolerance and so forth. So they've kind of set a precedence where I think they sort of need to be a little bit more responsible. And I think that this was another case where, other than like one or two little occasions, did they take it seriously or offer, you know, multiple solutions to it? You know, I think they just kind of, I think they were a little bit irreverent and irresponsible, like, especially in terms of the Holly character. But you know, again, as always, you know, the scenes, the more serious scenes actually were really handled incredibly well, I thought.
Well, I think we're going to have to definitely get into that in a more specific way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I you and I discussed this a little bit. I agree with you to a point. I think that the complaints I have about this episode are similar to the complaints I had about Blanded on the Alcohol. Even though in Blame It on the Alcohol, one of the characters complained and said, well, what about a song about not drinking? And Mr. Schuster said, you should do that. And then they never did. Mm-hmm. And in this episode, they kind of did the same thing where Rachel said, what about a song about celibacy? And he said, absolutely, you should sing that song. And they never did. So, they do seem willing to take really strong stances on some things, and then mm-hmm. other things they kind of just throw their hands up and be like, it's entertainment.
Yeah, okay, but more specifically, in that scene when Rachel said that, Holly basically made fun of her and said, if you believe celibacy is an option, then you're naive or frigid.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's more about Rachel than anything.
But, yeah, so I don't know. I mean, I adore Holly. She's so much fun, but there has to be a little bit of seriousness. I mean, there's no way she could be a teacher. No way anybody would hire her to mold the minds of children.
I don't know what high school you went to, but
Holly would have been
just fine at my high school.
Really?
She would have been the most popular girl in the school. The only problem with Holly being an actual teacher is that I don't know one that looks like that.
Or who can afford that wardrobe?
Yeah, that's a good point, too. Her leather outfit she did Do You Want to Touch Me?
And you're closer, you know, to high school age than we are. I mean, did you have a teacher that was like that?
I had a teacher that I had a substitute teacher who pretty much could have been Holly Holiday, but she was older. Like she was just like she was Holly Holiday like 20 years ago, yeah. And she was really awesome. She was like the most like when I had her as a sub at. Whenever anyone had her as a sub, it was a good day in that class. So yeah, I mean,
because there weren't no work getting done. Is that what you mean?
I was a good student back in high school, so I got work done. But
well, I mean, I guess I can see how a substitute teacher has nothing to lose, and all they want to do is just, you know, have everybody like them for a day. I mean, again, when I was in high school, we had, you know, Sister Cafeteria would come down and, you know, mind us when our teachers were out. We didn't have anybody, you know, like a real teacher. It was just more of a study hall. So it was different.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know that we ever actually had sex ed when I was in high school, which explains a lot about the productive qualities of my high school. But, you know, I mean, to say that, like, Holly Holiday doesn't make a believable teacher, the only things I question about her is her energy. I've never known a teacher that still had that level of energy. I guess we're being a little harsh on teachers, or at least I am. But most of my family is, so I'm allowed.
So okay. I just... Yeah. Whatever.
Well, we started off there with, Do You Want to Touch... Do You Want to Touch Me? Oh Yeah, as the title is. Originally written by Gary Glitter, later performed by Joan Jett, which is probably the version that most people know. Gary Glitter, who was sexy when he was popular and then found out to be not sexy at all. Go ahead and Wikipedia that one, kids. And he never wrote a song that couldn't be played at a sporting event. That's the thing to know about Gary Glitter. Everything always had at some point you could all go, yeah, in unison. Those were memorable things. Ed, what did you think about Do You Want to Touch Me and the accompanying musical number?
I thought it was fun. It reminds me of Hate on Me. It's like, me, by its very definition, is the opening of yourself up to joy. And it was just joyful, or dare I say, gleeful.
Very nice.
Well, yes, it was kind of fun to have Holly back. I mean, I think that was one of the big takeaways from this episode. And the way Holly ends in her possibly getting together with Will Schuster. I believe we have a listener who weighed in about Holly Holiday.
Hey, Gleeful Gang. This is Michael from Idaho. And I just wanted to say that I thought that Sexy was a great episode. And I felt that the writers did a pretty good job of not making Holly Holiday the focus of the episode like some of the other guest stars have been. Also, my favorite moment of the episode was pretty early on when it was Rachel's expression when Brittany was explaining why she thought she was pregnant.
Yeah, it was a Holly coming back in under the guise of being the sex ed teacher filling in because the original sex ed teacher had herpes.
A raging case
of the herpes. We did get a couple emails about Brittany in the opening, thinking that she was pregnant and saying, you know what, how could she not have figured it out? Because of everything that we went through with Quinn earlier in the season. But I think that's the fun about Brittany. I mean, I don't know. I guess I felt it coming from a mile away. As soon as she said she was pregnant, we all went, oh, you're not. This is going to turn out.
I know, right? No, the second she said she had a bun in the oven, I was like, oh, is she baking something?
Exactly.
Yeah, she doesn't know what it means. But that whole opening sequence was just so much fun. It was great to see the kids kind of interact like that. And
I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, it reminds me of the... I can't remember. Is it the sectionals episode from last season where they have the cell phone scene? That's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. Yeah, and even the drinking episode last week when they were talking about, you know, are they going to Rachel's party and then they...
Yeah,
you know, they kind of party line each other. I mean, they've done that a couple of times, and it just reminded me that it's been a while that we've seen all of the gang together like that.
Yeah, it's a good point. I mean, they get so fractured, and they get off into their little cliques, and we lose pieces of them. But let's talk a little bit about Holly. I guess the main question I have for you guys is, does this mean we're going to get more Holly? Is she coming back?
She was She's going to be on episode 17. I already know.
She's coming back at least one more time.
At least.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
So we're definitely going to get more Holly, and we will see how the relationship with her and Will Schuster develops. And she kind of came in as the one side of the voice of the sex talk, shall we call it. And,
sex ed.
In her part of it. She did have that line that kind of like the summation of her opinion on the topic was she had that line, "I'm off to have some crazy sex because I'm crazy informed about it."
that line was Trey epic.
Yeah.
Trey epic.
No, I mean, she does. I mean, okay, so when she did come to see the Glee Club for the first time and she performed that song, and then she did have, that one bit of sane advice. I was just saying, just be careful because everybody you sleep with, you're sleeping with everybody that everybody else slept with, and as we know, everybody's got a random. I'm like, that cracked me up.
She got some great jokes in this episode.
Yeah,
she got some great jokes. Some great one-liners came out of this one. Her whole when they were all kneeling, she said, "Why?" Or when they were sitting cross-legged with Santana
and Brittany. Yeah,
Santana and Brittany and. And, yeah, they said, "Why are we kneeling?" And she goes, "Because we're in Japan." No. I mean, I really like Gwyneth Paltrow, and she takes all this heat in the media, I guess, because of this kind of slightly skewed view of herself that people take issue with. But I find her so charming on this show. I don't really read "Oh No, They Didn't" anymore, so it's not as big of an issue for me. I don't know. Jennifer, how do you feel about being somebody who's really plugged into the public opinion about Gwyneth Paltrow?
You know, and I try not to read a lot of that stuff because, for the most part, I really do enjoy her performances, and I think her character is just, a lot of fun, and, she is very flippant and very... funny and off the cuff, and I know she wants to really connect with she really wants to connect with these kids and help them, but I think I will prefer her more out of the teaching spotlight, more as a love interest for Will.
Our listener there made a good point. They did do a good job of kind of making her the motivation for the episode without making her the centerpiece.
That's exactly how she was the previous time she was there. Yeah. Unlike Kristen Chenoweth and even John Stamos. Well, okay, whatever.
Chenoweth. I'll give you when Amber Rhodes is on the show is about Amber Rhodes.
Yeah, when Gwyneth as it's like she plays the part of the substitute teacher both physically and metaphysically, because she's like bringing something out of you that wouldn't have been brought out under any other circumstance.
Yeah, and she's very temporary, and she even tells Will that she's like, "You don't want to get involved with me. I'm just this is who I am."
I mean, it's one of those really great characters that is such a, everything about her adds up to this larger opinion. You know, everything about Holly all adds up to who Holly is. There are no stray details about that character. Ed, how did you feel about having Holly back on the show? Is this a character that you look forward to?
I look forward to her more than most guest stars. I look forward to her more than John Stamos, more than most people. Hey, so, she's awesome.
You watch it.
We need all more right. Stamos.
We did get Stamos in this episode. We absolutely did.
Cutie Carl.
We did get Cutie Carl. And I guess the one other thing to say about Holly Holiday before we leave that topic is when she's doing her "Do You Want to Touch Me" number and she holds up, or Will holds up the sign that says "Too Much." That was just fantastic.
Yeah, it was really cute. Do we want to just talk about their tango?
Absolutely, yeah. Let's go ahead and take a look. And let's see. I think it's about time for a song. Let's go ahead and take a listen to their tango before we discuss it. Here is Matthew Morrison and Gwyneth Paltrow performing "Kiss" by, of course, the Immortal Prince.
Immortal.
Damn right.
You don't have to be beautiful to turn me on. Just need your body, baby, from dusk till dawn. You don't need experience to turn me out. You just need it all up
So, I don't know how you guys feel about this song, and so I'm just going to go ahead and ask you. Ed, how did you feel about Kiss as performed by Will and Holly and Kiss in general?
Okay, well, so when I saw the previews for this song, I was super stoked because I thought it was going to be a massive group number at the end of the show. and then it wasn't. As you know,
I saw
and,
that one. Yeah.
And Will and his false is kind of concerning. I wish they would just lowered it a key or two. I don't know. I remember. I'm gonna say I remember this. I remember complaining about the predictability of the show. Being like blah blah blah, this that, and then end with a big group number. And then when it didn't happen, I was angry. So, you know what? Yeah. Don't even listen to me. Just do it.
You make a really good point, actually, and we'll get back to Kiss in a second. But you make a really good point that this episode ends on a really annoying comma. Like, it went to a commercial, and Jennifer, I'm pretty sure you did, but I definitely thought we were going to a commercial and we were coming back.
Mm-hmm.
And then it just went immediate to that Brad Folichuk television, whatever. Logo, and it was like, it was so weird how this episode ended.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm sorry, like, there's really not much else to say. Yes, I was surprised. And well, I think too, because it was so kind of fast paced. There was just, you know, like, we're just getting stuff from all different directions in this show. And I think when it ended, it was just sort of like, wait, nothing happened. But I mean, everything happened, but nothing happened. So yeah, I was a little bit of surprised by that. I don't know how he thinks that this version is a tango version.
That was my main complaint.
Oh, okay, yeah. Other than you tango.
Okay, honestly, I feel like this was when I saw the second I saw the scene, I was like, oh my god, Dancing with the Stars, appealing to our 40-plus woman demographic.
Matthew Morrison is campaigning for Dancing with the Stars 2020.
I believe it.
I don't think he has to wait that long.
You know, ouch.
No. Oh, wait, that came out. That came out wrong.
Well, I mean, if Matthew Morrison was on Dancing with the Stars, he would be the biggest star on Dancing with the Stars.
Oh, yeah, that's what I'm saying.
You know, but I totally agree. And when they first, you know, when we saw Kiss in the preview, I was like, you know, I love Kiss. I love Kiss the song, and I love Prince. And so I was excited about that, but I didn't want them to just do the song, you know, to mimic the song, because Prince has such a distinctive vocal style. I'm like, I hope they do something really unique with it. And then when Schuster says, I want to do it as a tango, I was totally having incredibly dorky, theater nerdy visions of Roxanne from Moulin Rouge and thinking they're going to tango out Prince, and that would be amazing. But it's exactly what you said. Just because you're dancing the tango to the song doesn't make the song a tango. It makes your dancing, you know, it's a so you think you can dance moment. It's not an actual tango. And so that really bugged me. That, and I do, I agree with you, Ed. I think it sounds a little silly for Schuster to be singing the falsetto, like, note for note along with Prince, and then you bring in Gwyneth Paltrow, who's, you know, also kind of singing the falsetto, because her voice is a little deeper to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing just felt like kind of a big wasted opportunity to me. Like, it could have been so much more epic, and it just ended up being a karaoke version of a Prince song with some, you know, nice, some nice hired dancers in the scene.
Yeah, and it was odd that, you know, they didn't take an opportunity to do something with the students, but I did like how they at least kind of seemed to try to explain these random dancers in the background by him saying, okay, now imagine us doing this and doing this, and then, like, boom, the first step, they're in that scene.
Yeah, true.
As opposed to other times, like when they did Umbrella, they, in Sand of the Rain mashup, they just all of a sudden are now in these crazy costumes on this crazy set. But and then when they kissed at the end, There were still students behind them, right?
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, I know, right? I was like, did the band just disappear? No. They're there.
Standing there silently holding their instruments like always.
That was so weird. I had the exact same thing where I'm like, are they going to leave? Like, you know that there's a bunch of 17-year-old kids standing behind.
I wish they would show the kids like sort of like backing slowly out of the room or something. Really? I think that would have been funny.
Yeah, it would have been great to have the bass player be like, should we go?
Are we done? Yeah.
No, so he can only have one line and it has to be the same one over and over again?
Was that his line before? Should I go? That would have been hilarious.
That was his line when it was Rachel, you know how many kitties I've given away just because they're not right? Okay.
See, exactly. That would have been perfect if he had the exact same line a second time. I don't know. I mean, Jennifer, how do you feel about Will and Holly Holiday as a couple? Or at least for an episode?
I like it. I think it's a good change for him. I think he can kind of get out of his idealistic ways and, you know, like he married his high school sweetheart and that was supposed to be perfect. And then he had a crush on the high school guidance counselor and that was supposed to be perfect. And I think with her, he's going to know right off the bat it's going to get messy. And I think, you know, he should...
Yeah.
Be okay with that.
I think it'll, I mean.
I think he needs to understand not all relationships are perfect.
I think it'll change his expectations a little bit for what, you know, what a relationship can be. He does seem to be a bit, if he was my friend, like if I was hanging out with Will, I would be like, dude, you just need to go like have some silly relationships for a little while. Not even some relationships. You just need to go date a little bit, you know, mm-hmm. and just kind of be goofy for a while. Because he's so over serious right now. Ed, how do you feel about Holly and Will as a couple?
I think they're awesome. As I've said before, which someone quoted to me, back at me, I have many plans for Will and none of them involve Emma.
Yes.
I was like, I don't remember saying that, but that's so something I would say.
Yes, we have been running the contest for a little while, and I didn't get a chance to pick a winner or I was going to put all the names in a hat, but we'll do that next week. But you can stop sending favorite moments from the show. I'm going to go ahead and close the contest by the time you hear this, because we got so many great moments of people finding things that we said that I was just like, I don't remember saying that at all. Like somebody found me saying in some early episode, you know, I think there's a perfect world where Will gets Quinn's baby and everyone's happy.
I don't remember that. That's funny.
It was hilarious. Well, yeah, there's not a lot to say about Will and Holly. I guess I kind of fall in between you guys. Like, I think they will make an epic television couple, but I think it will mainly be because of the disaster it will create.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I think it'll be fun to watch.
Why would I don't see why it would be a disaster. I don't see it. I mean, you're probably right, but I'm maybe idealistic.
Well, let's go ahead and listen to a bit of Landslide, which will cue the next major topic of conversation, of course. This is Santana and Brittany and Gwyneth Paltrow on lead vocals, which was kind of funny where they were like, we should do a song together. Can you help us? And then she essentially sang the song. But go ahead and here is a bit of Landslide.
I took my love and I took it down. Climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in the snow-covered hills where the landslide brought me down. Oh, mirror in the sky, what is love? Can the child within my heart rise? Can I sail through the changing ocean of tides? Can I handle the seasons of my life? Uh-oh.
Are they totally aping the Dixie Chicks version of this song? Is it just like a straight note for note?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is the Dixie Chicks version, for sure.
It was very cute. You can actually find on Hulu a behind-the-scenes video about this, and Stevie Nicks was actually on set while they were recording this, which must have been insane. And she gives an interview where she says she wrote it when she was 25, and it was really about her uncertainty of going out into the world. But then, Jennifer, you said you did some research and found Stevie Nicks gave like 7 explanations for this song.
There was a lot of conflicting stories, and then finally somebody said, you know, she will never say, or she's appears to be reluctant to say what specifically it is because it means so many different things to different people. But ultimately, it does come down to she does say she was 25. It was weeks before she was asked to be in Fleetwood Mac, and she was in Colorado. but it is about the uncertainty of your future. And she's looking around at all this snow, and she's like, this could all come down, and just it would be over. So it's kind of interesting. But a lot of people have applied their own ideas to it. What it means. So.
Well, and a song that's like this reasonably abstract. You can imagine that she had so many things going on in her mind when she was writing it. She doesn't even know what it's, she doesn't even remember what brought it on. It just kind of happens and you go, that people will be singing that song until long after I die.
It's a pretty song.
It is a wonderful song, and even though it gets attributed to Fleetwood Mac, they didn't really have that much to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a lovely song, and of course this brings us to a discussion of Santana and Britney, and the wild, bizarre storyline of Santana, I guess, in one way or another, coming out to Britney and saying, I want to be in a relationship with you. She's very adamant to say, don't put labels on me. I'm not one thing, I'm not another, but I do want to be in a relationship with Britney. I was watching this. We were watching this scene when, Santana first makes this speech at the lockers to Britney, and I'm thinking, what just happened? Like, did that scene actually take place? It came totally out of nowhere to me. And how did you feel about this whole thing? Did this seem in character, or?
Oh, it just blew my mind. I was like, hold on, they're actually addressing this? What? No.
Yeah.
I thought it was gonna be like, Santana was always gonna be like the sex shark. Huh? Who isn't even that? Like, if Santana can't sex shark, then who can? So I don't know. I was just confused, and it was awesome, but I was confused, and I don't know if I believe her that she's gay, but I mean it was good. It was good to happen, I guess.
Well, I don't think she was saying she was gay. I mean, I think the show was trying to take a bit more of a central, statement on Santana's character. I mean, it what was weird for me is the show always seemed to be coming down firmly on this, like, Santana and Britney aren't gay, they're not straight, they just make out. And and that's kind of a unique thing to put on television, because, usually characters can be summed up in very short words, and gay and straight are the two shortest words that you can choose. Right after white and black, really. And so it was just kind of, it was interesting that the show was, actually coming down, not only coming back to this storyline, which was always kind of like a naughty inside joke for the first season, and now not only are they coming back into it, but they blew it up into a full storyline. I mean, it ends with Britney saying, if I wasn't with Artie, I would be with you. And I think we all know what Santana's going to do with that. I mean, they hit that so hard. I think we all see where this is going.
I don't know. I think it would be in character for Santana. I almost called her something else. to do something evil, and because ever since post pregnancy, Santana has taken that role. But I don't think she's going to. I think she wants Britney to come to her on her own accord.
Interesting. Well. Yeah, I guess. I mean, there's definitely an argument could be made for that as well. Jennifer, how did you feel about Santana and Britney in this episode?
Well, when we watched it for the first time last night, I thought, okay, she's coming out as a lesbian, and I'm thinking this is kind of dismissive. It seemed like they were just being a little too brisk with it. But watching it, I actually watched it for a third time tonight. I got the impression that she's a a sexual person and she doesn't have, you know, a set category. I mean, maybe she is technically bi then, because she is in love with Brittany and she wants to be in a relationship with Brittany. And if it can't be with Brittany, it's not just any other girl. And, you know, maybe that means it's just not with any other guy either. But chances are, because of her fear of being stigmatized by the label of lesbian, she will probably then, you know, be with guys. It's really tough. I mean, first off, she was amazing. I thought
she
her performance
well.
Was incredible. Yeah. And just very, very, very heartbreaking, very, very tender, and very moving. So I thought she was incredible in that. And I just, I don't know. I think in a way, if I had to guess what was going to happen next, I would think that, you know what, she's going to go back to just being, you know,
Santana,
because I mean, if now that she's figured out the source of her anger and the source of her mean words and her bitchiness, now that, you know, she can't be with Brittany, she's going to go back to being that, you know, being the bitch again and having all those nasty comments. So, and I mean, come on, with Quinn, you know, stepping down from queen bitch role, we need somebody in that position.
I don't even know if I shouldn't give Quinn that credit anymore. It's been so long.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It's been seriously 20 episodes.
Yeah, that's true. More, since last baby bump or the first baby bump scene.
Yeah, like her being a bitch is like Lauren Zeiss is more. I'm loving loving Lauren Zeiss as well.
She's hysterical.
Well, I guess you make a couple interesting points, Jennifer. I mean, I do think it's a reasonably complex, and considering that primetime television is not well known for being complex, it's a reasonably brave statement for her to make, where she's saying, you know, essentially, I don't know if I'm gay, I don't know if I'm straight, but I know I want to be with you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a great, like, there. One of the few holdovers from that movie, Chasing Amy, that still kind of holds up is when she says, you know, I didn't go searching for a man or a woman. I just went searching for somebody that I could love.
Mm-hmm.
And I got that kind of sense from Santana. And that is kind of a, you know, especially in a label-driven culture that we live in, it's a really interesting statement for her to make and kind of a brave stance for the show to have. But then there were also kind of some cheap elements of it that really bothered me. Like her thing where, like, I figured out why I'm so angry all the time. And I'm like, no, that's such a cop out. You know, no, you're angry because you're a bitch. You can be a bitch who digs chicks. I'm cool with that. But you're still a bitch. Like, and that's why that's what, you know, who you are. And so that kind of bothered me. And that whole the whole speech that Brittany gives in response, this, like, I would be with you if Artie was out of the way. And if Artie was out of the way, I'd totally be with you. It was like, it's the worst compliment ever, you know, where it's like, I totally want to date you, except that I'm dating somebody else right now. But you're next on the dance card.
That's so that doesn't make a person feel better?
Not in the
slightest. I wouldn't make me feel better.
Yeah, Ed, what'd you say? It would make you feel better?
Yeah, I would rather. It's better whether I'm second, whether I'm 50, as I'm on the list and you're not.
But the thing is, I mean, you're looking at the person and saying, if you really wanted to date me, you'd date me. But you, it's not that you really want to date me, it's that there's just this, you know, this other person who's already got my spot. It's well, like, I mean, Brittany doesn't care enough about either of them to make a choice.
She's already in a relationship, so Isn't like she found out, isn't like Brittany found out about it and then rushed into a relationship with Artie and then said no, because that would be a different story. But, I mean.
So we can just chalk this up to the Jane Austen that lives deep inside Josh. Well, let's go ahead and take a listen to this message from Texas.
So many things to tell you guys and so little time. It's Harrison from Allen, Texas again. I want to let Josh know that my favorite part of your show is when Josh asked what we thought about the episode. I love, 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 love Ed's comments, like, when the monster strikes. And there was a slushy attack at my school. Somebody, an openly gay kid, got slushied repeatedly 18 times in the face by the football team. So that was interesting. And All right, I love you guys. And I will give anybody who needs it my firstborn child. Goodbye.
So, seriously, what
I was
is
laughing
up
at
with
the last comment, not
yes.
the slushy thing. Sorry.
The slushy thing is so depressing. And it just doesn't seem to be going away, or at least, you know, we keep hearing about it from listeners. So, I mean, I wonder if there's an opportunity for the show to say, like, hey, we've talked a lot about a lot of stuff on our show, but maybe there's an opportunity for them to say, okay, now we're going to go out in the real world and we're actually going to, you know, have these conversations with real human beings and kind of take the show into a real world stance. I don't know. It's definitely one of those things that I would love to stop hearing about in the real world. That was kind of a downer, but thanks, Harrison. I think that, you know, we need to be reminded that crappy stuff happens in the world so that we can, you know we have to continue doing things about it. Hopefully this message will be nicer.
Hi. Oh my God, I love your podcast. I've sent emails before. This is Ayumi from New York, and I actually just finished watching, so I don't know if it's too late for the actual recording, but I just had to say, like, actually say instead of just email it, but this is literally the episode that has made me cry more than I've ever cried before. I am a bit of a sob person, but actually my dog started freaking out from how much noise I was making crying. I just can't believe, like, how amazing the entire show has just kind of been now. Just the way that they've been taking, like, not just Brittany and Santana, but also, like, all the situations around Kurt and even Blaine. Like, it's become really impressive for me as a queer person myself. And I just wanted to tell you guys that, also, I love your podcast. Yeah, that's it. Bye.
And thank you, Ayumi. You have emailed me a bunch of times, and I definitely wanted to play your voice on the show. And which leads us, of course, to Kurt and Blaine, and Kurt and Bert in this episode.
Yes.
And we'll go ahead and start with Kurt and Blaine. In this episode, Kurt and Blaine, or Blaine was trying to teach Kurt how to be sexy. which was kind of hilarious, because for a moment, I couldn't tell, like, if that was actually Kurt genuinely trying to be sexy, or if it was going to turn out to be, you know, the kind of, like, Kurt doesn't know what he's doing. Because Chris Colfer plays Kurt as pretty confident in his, you know, in his presence, and particularly when he was performing. It was just kind of wild. Ed, I'm sure you have plenty of things to say about this, and Klain.
It was exciting. I definitely thought, like, I definitely knew when Kurt started doing it that he was going to that Blaine was going to be like, what are you doing? Like, they're all the same. And it was so funny. I was watching Glee last night with my friend Dita. What up, Dita? When they were doing Animal, which I'm sure we'll segue into soon enough.
Nice.
I was like, Kurt, what are you doing? This is too much. Who do you think you are? Me? That's what I do. You can't. That's my.
Well, it was kind of wild, and, you know, seeing Kurt, kind of like a kink in, or a chink in Kurt's armor. I don't know. There was something about it really entertaining.
Oh, what do you mean? Like, do we have this, like, idea that he's, like, this perfect person? I'm like, I don't have this idea.
Oh, not even a little, but Kurt as a performer seems entirely confident in his ability.
I suppose.
I mean, he got up and did the whole All That Jazz number, Le Jazz Hot number.
Mm-hmm. Le Jazz Hot,
you know, I mean, the dude has, like, no fear as a performer, and then to see him doing, like, the Thriller, or the you know, Teen Wolf fingers, and, like, he does this hip shake at one point that's just hilarious.
I loved how he said he has the sex appeal of a baby penguin.
Oh, awesome. The penguins are so adorable, though.
I know! That's the thing. I'm like, ooh, I just want to pick him up and squeeze him. He's so cute.
Let's go ahead and take a listen to that particular song. This is Animal, as performed by the Warblers. And I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say this does not sound at all like a human beatbox, even though in the show there was a dude doing the human beatbox. Here's Animal.
Here we go again. I kinda wanna be more than friends. So take it easy on me. I'm afraid you're never satisfied.
Here we go again. We're sick like animals, we play pretend. You're just a cannibal and I'm afraid I won't get out alive.
No, I won't sleep tonight.
Funny, this, I think this is the first song that it really jumped out at me on Glee, where they sang the second verse.
Like, I know, it was really long. It was really long. But you know what? I loved it. I've been listening to this song all week because because I don't know why. And I posted it on the Twitter feed with spoiler tags. And even though I'm over Klain, this song is fierce.
I honestly could not care less about this one. It's my least favorite Warblers performance. It's
what?
One of my least favorite songs.
It makes me. Animal is such a good song.
Oh,
though.
Come on! It just makes me want to take a carnival cruise. Like, there's
really?
There's.
It makes me want to bite my teeth and just to some steak.
Oh,
wow.
Nah, I mean, honestly, I do like the original version better, which I've yet to say about anything that Darren Criss has done in my life.
Interesting.
But
lots of hate emails.
Oh, I guarantee I'll get hate emails.
I'm typing one now. Dearest Josh.
I don't know. I found it kind of like the one thing I have to give the original song, as much as I'm not a big fan of the original song. And like I said, it just makes me want to take a carnival cruise. I at least it has a certain energy to it. There's a certain drive to it. The girl, I looked them up on Wikipedia because I was all curious, and they're actually a Mormon band from Provo. Who knew? The girl who plays drums, it's a total drum machine, and she's just miming along. But I'm like, hey, I can even get behind that because it has a nice drive. But for some reason, when the Warblers do it, it just doesn't have the kick in the chest that the original does. I really found this one kind of boring.
That's
Jennifer.
Funny. No, I disagree. This is because I actually don't really care for this song, and this is hearing them do it, I'm actually enjoying it. I think it was a lot of fun. I mean, yeah, it was a little on the long side, but I just thought the whole scene was kind of fun. But I did think it was funny that, you know, Blaine thought it would be a good idea to test out their sexiness on, you know, the girls' school, only to get them all hot and bothered just to dump them, you know, just to break their hearts.
Sorry, I'm on the wrong other team.
Hey, Blaine, yeah. Like, ugh. So mean.
I saw that scene a couple ways. One, I thought it was going to go way dirtier than it ended up going. Because you have a bunch of, like, you're on television in 2011 and you've got a bunch of girls in schoolgirl skirts.
In a foam machine.
I did not think this was going to end well. and awesome, depending on how you ask. As soon as I saw that scaffolding, as we've said on the show before, Jennifer and I don't look at the songs they're going to perform ahead of time. And so as soon as I saw that scaffolding, I thought they were going to do Cold Hearted Snake. Because it's the same scaffolding, or it's similar.
It's the same.
To the Paula Abdul video, Cold Hearted Snake. And I thought that would be hilarious.
It's like the same. It's like the same abandoned factory lot. Oh,
YouTube
my
that one, kids.
Wow.
But of course, that's not what happened. Yeah, this one was lost on me, but you guys liked it, and that's cool.
Oh, yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun.
If somebody had the same hairdo as that lead singer, that would be funny. And then, of course, this is going. This
oh,
I think.
Side note. So the Warblers minus Darren. I don't know if it's with or without Darren.
It is
Darren
with him.
Chris.
They're going to do a record with him.
Is that where you're going as well?
No, but you reminded me of that. Yes, but I think it's just a special record of what.
Nothing.
Oh, I think it's just a special record of their songs from Glee. I didn't get the sense that it was new original music.
I thought lots of Warbler songs, actually 90% of Warbler songs have been not included in the compilations. I believe Teenage Dream is the only one. Oh, all the other ones, right. All the other ones have been kicked to the wayside. So
you can get them as individual singles, but you can't.
Yeah,
get them
you can get them on the albums, which is bullshit
stuff.
Well, I did this shit.
So yeah, I mean they'll probably put together an exclusive Warbler CD with all the Darren Criss stuff and all the Warbler stuff. That makes sense. That makes sense.
That's exciting. That's still exciting. Even if it isn't new stuff, it's exciting.
Yeah, definitely. Let's go ahead and take a listen to this is from Illinois.
Hey, Justin and Ed. My name is Erica, and I've been a listener since the very beginning of your podcast. I love it. And I just wanted to ask two questions about last night's episode. One, how do you think that they handled the discussion of sex? And two, do you think Kurt was being a hypocrite when he did not want to listen to what his dad was saying at first about guys in relationships when last week he got mad at his dad for not knowing anything? All right, I can't wait to hear your next episode. Bye.
Thank you, Erica, for segueing us into our next topic. And that is, of course, the most talked about aspect of this episode, I think, is people discussing the conversation that Kurt and Bert had at the table, which Blaine actually incited. But, you know, I thought it was great. I'll just start. I thought it was awesome. I thought the conversation was incredibly well-written, incredibly even-handed. I thought that Kurt was appropriately uncomfortable. and my only complaint with it was I felt that, like, it was inconsistent between the conversation that Kurt and Bert had two episodes ago, or last episode. Mm-hmm. I thought it was inconsistent, but I thought that this one felt real. This one felt the way it should go, and the conversation in the last episode felt contrived and annoying. This felt very, I mean, just as awkward and wrong, and yet Bert, with his thing about don't go throwing yourself around like you don't mean anything because you mean something, that was like what every parent should tell their child.
Yeah.
It was so right. Jennifer?
I thought that was the best part of the show, and I wish that message could have been conveyed in some way to all of the kids.
Exactly. Because it would have been great to make that the larger message of the show.
That was, I'm not going to say it's lost on Kurt. I'm saying it's lost on just one person. I think that, you know, that should have somehow come from, I mean, it's like, okay, you know, Holly has her beliefs that education will keep people safe, and Emma has her belief that, you know, lack of information will keep people safe. I don't think either one is right. I think somewhere in the middle is probably closer, but I think, you know, and that's talking about the mechanics and the physical aspect. And it's like, get to the emotional part of it. And I think that was just such an incredible message. And I don't really think it was inconsistent or that, Kurt was being a hypocrite, because, you know, we all kind of talk a good game sometimes, and then when it comes down to it, that is going to be the most uncomfortable conversation to have with your parents. And so, yeah, I think, you know, he was upset that his dad called him on something, and so he kind of lashed out at him, but it was something that was needed to be addressed, and his dad took the initiative with a little edging, you know, from Blaine. And he did something about it. And I thought it was perfect. I thought it was absolutely perfect.
Ed, how did you feel about Kurt and Bert?
I thought the scene was written for Bert to get an Emmy. honestly.
Should get one.
Well, because, like, it's completely inconsistent. I'm glad I never had to talk with my parents. Thank God. But, I hated it. I mean, the message was great. Everything was great about it, but I hated that Kurt just last episode was like, you need to inform yourself, and then he was like, I don't even want to hear it. Like, that just made me so angry. And I feel like it was, the whole scene was just written for Bert to get an Emmy. Like, that's all I feel about it. And the message was good. Okay. Whatever.
I'm sorry. I just can't help shaking the, you know, feeling that, you know, I once was a very rebellious, angry teenager, and I said some stuff to my parents, and, you know, whether or not I really meant it or not, probably not. And I just think in the heat of the moment, he, you know, was just lashing at his dad. So, like, for his dad to really take him up on it, I think, embarrassed him, and then to really face a situation was even more embarrassing. So I'm thinking it's very consistent with an emotional, insecure, unsure, teenager.
Yeah, I mean, one of the interesting things about that relationship is that it is always changing. Even though at its core is a very deep love and appreciation,
Solid. The
layers of evolution and, like, you know, how a father-son relationship or any parent-child relationship has to change over time as people get older and circumstances evolve, that relationship has to change. And we are getting to watch that happen. And you make a good point. I mean, put in the perspectives of put in the context of the real world, mm-hmm. there's always a period where you get really angry and you're just trying to make a point. And even if you don't mean that point, you're just trying to kind of hurt your parents.
Yeah.
And to a certain degree, the argument could be made that that's all Kurt was doing in the last episode by saying, you should learn some of these things. Is he was like, this is something I've got on you, mm-hmm. and I'm going to use it because I don't want to be wrong in this moment.
Yeah,
it's an interesting point. I guess the other question that Erica raised is how we feel the show handled the topics of sex. And I know we got a couple emailers who really felt that the show was kind of it was kind of irresponsible. And we talked about it a little at the top of the show. I mean, yeah, I agree with Jennifer. I feel that it would have been nice to have at least some more voicing of, somebody to come against Holly with a better argument than Emma.
The
pro celibacy argument would have been at least a little more valid in place to just kind of create the counterpoint against uh-huh. Emma.
Yeah.
Or I'm sorry, against Holly. But yeah, I think that at least it's starting conversations to a certain degree, and bringing up the sex tape thing in modern culture is huge.
Oh my goodness.
That's something that no one has the balls to bring up. And so the whole concept of, if you're filming yourself having sex and you're under 17, that's technically child pornography, even if you're doing it yourself.
No one else on television
is bringing that up, except for maybe SVU, which is not what you should be watching. So, I thought that was a really valid point to mm-hmm. make on the show.
Yeah, it did have some points, but I just think that it created more questions and it still somehow glamorized it more than anything.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. The question is always, where do you come down between Holly and Emma? You mm-hmm. know, do you think that information is good, or do you think that, information is encouraging or whatever? I don't know. I mean, I thought a lot about this today, what I would say on the show. And the one thing I kind of came back to is, when I was in high school, I didn't do any drinking and I didn't have any sex. And it was because I was afraid. It was a decision made out of fear. It was not a decision made out of choice or information. And so I think whatever decision you make, it's a decision you should make out of information and choice and understanding, and not just sheer fear.
Yeah.
So, if the show is promoting information and understanding
and discussion,
I think it's moving in the right way. It's certainly doing it. There's no way it could be more irresponsible than Gossip Girl.
Well, and maybe that's what maybe that's where the show is drawing the line. That all they can do is stimulate conversation, because there is no right or wrong answer for anybody. That people have to make those choices for themselves, and maybe just it's enough to get people thinking about it.
I should amend my former statement to, it was also a decision made out of Dungeons and Dragons, because that is time consuming. Ed, do you have any opinion on how the show handled the topic of sex?
I think you're right, absolutely. As long as there's a dialogue being open, and as long as there's information and you're informed, people make mistakes, but you don't have to make the mistakes of other people. Just information.
And everyone
has a random.
And Jennifer, you make the best point. The best criticism I could have against this episode is that Kurt's message to, or Bert's message to Kurt should have been the message to everyone.
Somehow, it
should have been a larger message. It shouldn't have just been encapsulated in that one character and within the context of homosexuality.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely, Ed just tweeted, everyone has a random.
You have no proof.
So let's go ahead and take it. Listen to our last song in this episode. This is, of course, Afternoon Delight, which we are listening to because it has John Stamos in it. And Ed, you can bite me.
Oh my god! So when Puck was like, "Oh, we need more voices to balance this out," I'm like, "Flimsy logic for 300."
Exactly. Here's a bit of this.
My motto's always been, when it's right, it's right. Why wait until the middle of a cold, dark night?
When everything's a little clearer in the light of day. So excited,
skyrockets in light, afternoon delight.
That was, of course, Afternoon Delight, originally recorded by the Starland Vocal Band, sorry about that, which was made up of two married couples. And the one problem I had with this joke is that it's a joke I've seen on so many other TV shows, particularly Arrested Development, where Jason Bateman performs it with his niece, and they were like, dude, it's about hanging out in the afternoon, and they're like, it's not what it is.
I don't know, I just love the outfits, I love Rachel's over singing, yes. I just loved it all.
Oh, and what about Puck? What about Puck getting into playing the guitar?
Totally.
It was hysterical.
Well, and then taken out of the context of that this joke has been told so many times before, it was a great joke. It fit perfectly. But you make exactly the right point, Ed. It was totally the second that, like, that was the only reason Puck was even in the celibacy club. Was so that they could start the conversation about this number. And then when she's like, we need to get Carl, then Carl was just ready to go.
Yeah, he should have known. Come on. You know what? Okay, this is one problem I do have with this episode, specifically. When did Emma become a prude again? She was totally down with all this new stuff. Rocky Horror, touch me. All this stuff.
Yeah.
And now she's frigid again?
And she's more than ever, it seems. Like she,
yeah, it's not a germ, you know, thing now. She's afraid of the hose monster.
Yeah.
Which, I'm sorry, that's hysterical.
That was bizarre. I don't know. Yeah, I agree. I felt like we were growing, like we were seeing Emma grow, and then we find out that, like, Emma hasn't grown at all. It was really odd. I don't know. Ed, do you have an opinion on Emma in this one?
I don't know. It didn't make sense because I thought she grew past this, and I wish she wasn't in love with Will. Why can't she just be happy with John Stamos?
I know.
I'm not in love with him, but I would be happy. So.
She can't be. Well, I mean, and I adore him.
He played thoroughly on Kokomo.
I saw him play that live on Cape Cod, but they just can't keep him. They can't, because there's no way to show him regularly. I mean. If he stays married to Emma, we're only going to get to see him once every fifth episode. It's not going to happen.
That's fine. What's wrong with that? That's fine. No problem.
Need more Stamos. Need more Stamos.
I mean, I don't think that the show needs more Stamos. Personally, I think we have enough Stamos. I'll always take more, unless it's on Two and a Half Men. But that's just a blanket statement. And honestly, I like having him on the show, but yeah, within the context of Emma, I mean, it was kind of weird. I want to see. I think I like what you said, Ed. I wanted to see this relationship work for a little while. I didn't need to see, or I don't need to have them breaking up and having Will go into a like love triangle between Emma and Holly. That just doesn't seem interesting to me right now. I'd rather see Will try Holly for a little while, and then Emma try, you know, make things work with Carl, at least for a bit. I don't know. They seem to break up at the drop of a hat, too.
Well, I kind of thought, again, upon the third watching, I'm like, you know what? I guess he didn't just bail on her immediately. I mean, it seemed like, you know, he's waited 4 months. He had the sense to, well, I mean, it's Holly, but he had the sense to, like, bring the two of them to somebody to talk to about sex. And she couldn't, but the thing with him, I think he probably could have dealt with the lack of sex. I think the unresolved or questionable feelings that Emma still has for Will is what did it.
What, pushed it over the edge?
Yeah.
So
he was ready to bail. I mean, like, how do you fight with that?
Yeah.
You can't.
So when Holly asked Emma in front of Carl, are you still in love with Will Schuster? What was the motivation behind that question?
Honestly, I thought it was because she wanted to know if she was going to have a fight for Will.
No, I don't think so. I think Holly Holiday, if any person is truly looking to help other people, it's her.
Oh, you mean her helping herself or helping Emma?
I think she legitimately wanted to help Emma because she knows she's temporary. She doesn't want to hurt Will. So she just wanted to, like, I believe that it was actually to honestly and entirely help.
It was just, there were several things in her conversation with them. I mean, again, she was just, there was no caring and no nurturing. It was just all judgment. She's like, you haven't had sex? He's hot and you're 30. I'm like, okay, it's funny, but, you know.
That was funny, though.
It was funny. But, I mean, like, if this was supposed to be taken seriously as any sort of counseling, they needed to get some level of counseling.
I don't think it was supposed to. I mean, she kept saying, I'm not a doctor.
I'm not a doctor. You know? I wouldn't say that if I were.
Yeah.
But still.
Yeah, you know, I think it was a lot of fun, and I do want to see how it develops, so
yeah.
I don't know. That's pretty much all I have for this episode. Ed, did we forget anything?
You know what made me sad? When you said that Afternoon Delight was the last song, and I came to the realization again, there was no big group number. There really needed to be. There really needed to be. There needed to be. Period.
Well, there should be three next week. Right?
Well, there's I'm looking at the song list now, and I'm excited about a lot of things.
Good.
And, we have an original song next week.
Yeah, original next week. I'm also excited for Kathy Griffin next week.
Yes.
So,
Rod Remington is back next week, I've read.
Wow.
But, sorry, that was totally, we totally went spoilery there, and we try not to do that.
I mean, this information is public.
Well, so is a lot of things.
Yeah,
such as Holly Holiday's sex tape with J.D. Salinger, the late great J.D. Salinger.
Well,
Jennifer.
Well, what? Oh, Ed.
Sorry,
what were you saying? You said
I just said lol. That's it.
Oh, you said lol. I thought you said well. Like what? You've seen the sex tape with J.D. Salinger?
Awesome, Jennifer.
Okay. Quick thing that we kind of didn't address, Quinn and Finn.
I know
that was probably supposed to be a shocking moment, but
yeah.
I don't think it was shocking.
And was it shocking? I thought it was supposed to be.
I think the reveal was supposed to be. It was supposed to look like it was transitioning to a whole different scene, but her voice was. She was continuing the conversation now with him, and seriously. She doesn't know how to cover up a hickey.
Kind of a high school girl, is she?
Seriously.
It's embarrassing.
The kind that gets knocked up.
That's true.
Yeah. I'm not sure how I feel about this one. I do appreciate the fact that he had the sense to question her motives when she brought up prom king and queen again, because if he's going to get caught up in all of this, he at least should know what he's getting into. But I don't know. I'm not really feeling it.
Well, we shall see how it all turns out. I did put a message or a question up on the Facebook page and on Twitter. If you'd like to find us there, you can search for Gleeful, or on Twitter, go to Gleeful Podcast.
Oh, yeah, question. Yay.
And we talked a little bit about her. I asked everybody, what are your favorite songs about being or not being sexy? Of course, the most... Not of course, but the most suggested answer is Sexy Back by Justin Timberlake. And then with a close second being Rod Stewart's Do You Think I'm Sexy. I do like the Timberlake song, but I can't say that that Rod Stewart song is. I always thought that was tongue-in-cheek, but I don't know. We had some other great suggestions. Molly suggested Rush Rush by Paula Abdul. Molly, you were far too young to know that song. You Sexy Thing.
Wasn't Keanu Reeves in that music video?
It was. Good catch.
Oh, my God. I forgot about
yes.
that.
Yes. Listener Yvette had Def Leppard's Pour Some Sugar on Me. So that was pretty fun.
Nice.
And there's lots of other ones. I think the most obscure one that came through was listener Jessica had Lazy Eye by the Silver Sun Pickups. I don't know what that song's wow. about, but I know it's really hard on Rock Band 2. a couple other ones that came in on Twitter. You Sexy Thing, which is, of course, a great song by Hot Chocolate. And let's see, there was one other one. There were a couple funny ones on Twitter. Theater Knitterhead Again by Janet Jackson. Oh. So that's a pretty good one. And then lots of people had Lady Gaga's Love Game, which I don't know what a disco stick is, or at least I'm choosing not to.
It's the staff she carried around in 2009.
The staff she carried? Like an infection? And lots of people
like a rod.
Yeah. And the other one that I really liked was many people had George Michael's I Want Your Sex, but some said it was a sexy song and some said it was an unsexy song. you know, we usually we don't have enough time to play our picks, but
do we? Why don't we?
Why not?
I don't have anything queued up. We'll just go ahead and name it. You know, for me, I love anything by Barry White. You know, a good track like Can't Get Enough of Your Love, Babe is such a great sexy song. Jennifer, did you have a favorite sexy song?
Okay, when you
not by Jimmy Buffett.
When you presented the song to me, when you told me what the question was going to be, you worded it a little bit differently.
Go on.
So I went with a more chaste song. I went with John Legend's Ordinary People.
Interesting.
You know, can take it slow. We're just ordinary people.
Oh, wow. I
had no place to go.
I didn't read sex into that at all.
No, it's not. It's talking about not having sex.
Not having sex.
And developing a relationship first.
I don't think... But see, I know you, and I know how much you like John Legend. I don't think you could.
That voice.
You'd climb that man like a ladder.
That voice is yeah.
Ed, do you have
warm
a...
fuzzies all over.
Do you have a favorite sex
song? I've been trying to avoid Gaga... But I couldn't avoid it this. I couldn't avoid it this time.
Okay.
Well, actually, I could. Lying is the most fun a girl can have without taking off her clothes. Panic at the Disco is also up there.
Mm-hmm.
But the winner this week is Monster by Lady Gaga.
Monster nice. By Lady Gaga.
Like that subway scene in that song, which is a song, it's not even a video, but that subway scene in that song.
mm-hmm. Okay.
Nice.
Well, if you'd like to weigh in on anything that we discussed tonight, you can do so by emailing us at gleefulpodcast@gmail.com. You can check out the website, which is www.gleefulpodcast.com. You can also visit the Facebook fan page by searching for Gleeful Podcast. You can find us on Twitter at Gleeful Podcast. You'll notice a theme, little consistency there that we try to maintain. yes, lots of exciting things to come. You can also join Jennifer and I on our other podcast, which is at The Idol Review, theidolreview.com. We have the exciting story of when we actually got to attend American Idol this week. So that's exciting. And don't miss that. Ed, you have your American Idol blog for people to follow.
I post on that. I wasn't going to do it, but then I was like, whatever. I need the press anyways. I'll just put it on the Twitter feed. So there you go.
Nice.
Whatever.
And the t-shirts are to come. I've been designing the t-shirts all evening. And we got a really cool design, which, Ed, I changed the design, and you're going to love the new design. So I'll send it to
you. I'm
going
to love it. I'm excited. Oh, I know. I like the old design. I just wanted it to be known. I did like the old design.
Well, I've no... Thank you. But yes, I think the new one is amazing. Jennifer really likes it. I think it's going to be awesome, the new t-shirt design.
Oh, no. I know what you're saying.
So, for the Gleeful Podcast with Josh and Ed, I'm Josh.
I'm Jen.
Still thinking of vaguely... Darn it! Forget it!
Oh, no. Do it.
Go again. Do it.
Okay. Still seeking a vocally adequate, vaguely Eurasian man. I'm Ed.
Peace out.
Is that your Match.com page, Ed?
No, I don't have a Match.com page.
You should just put that on the top of your Match.com.
I don't know. I don't even know if it's true. It's just awesome.
It is awesome.
And the iTunes reviews, since Josh forgot about
Sorry, iTunes reviews. Yes, go.
Okay, Jeep8507, Sprout Lee, Before Crazy, Taylor Roach, Hello Kitty, ST78. Thank you for reviewing us. We are doing super dee doo brawsome because of you. And I don't know why, but the episode 35 for some reason is still like one of our most popular episodes, and it's like super old at this point. So if someone could explain that to me,
because it's the best.
Don't question it.
Yeah, don't question. Just the enjoy. Magic. Don't tell him not to applaud, Ed. So,
I just want to know what we did so we could do it again.
That's a good
point. That's all I want.
To re-listen to that one. All right, we will talk to everybody next week. Good night, everyone.